Good morning, the Green Valley News for Monday, July 6th. Mark DeGroft with you, Sun Sounds of Arizona, hoping you had a very safe and pleasant weekend. 2 years after being chosen as Arizona's lone representative and following months of fundraising and planning, the Sorita High School marching band finally faced an obstacle that they couldn't overcome, the weather. The 85-member band, scheduled to participate Friday in Philadelphia's Salute to Independence semi-quincentennial parade, learned that it was canceled just hours before marching. With temperatures expected to hit 100 degrees and with a heat index 5 to 10 degrees higher, organizers cited safety concerns. A day earlier, Philadelphia tied its record high of 103 degrees, prompting the cancellation of a concert on Thursday night. Earlier on Thursday, an event in the nearby Berks County saw 100 people treated for heat-related illness, with 45 people sent to area hospitals. But the cancellation didn't get the Mustangs down. Booster Club President Laura Ludwig, who traveled to Philadelphia, said the band was resilient and would play Friday afternoon at the Liberty Bell. They also completed a mini band-off with a marching band from Wisconsin on Friday morning in an impromptu event covered by a local TV station. "It's hot, but the humidity is rough," Ludwig said on Friday morning. After shortening the parade to 1 mile, it was still too great of a risk for the parade participants and the spectators, too. Ludwig said that the band, which arrived on Tuesday, said it still had much to look forward to before returning home on Sunday. During the trip, the students would visit the Liberty Bell, Independence Hall, Betsy Ross's house, the 9/11 Memorial, the Museum of Modern Art, the Empire State Building, the Hershey Park, and go on a dinner cruise that will take them by the Statue of Liberty. They'll also take in the Broadway musical, Maybe Happy Ending. The band raised more than $200,000 for the trip, with a lot of community support and hard work. Sorita Town Council staff launched an FAQ on Saturday about the 2022-2026 general plan ahead of the Prop 420 vote on July 21st, amid growing concerns from residents trying the plan to data centers. Community Development Deputy Director Nathan Barrett said that the FAQ is in response to community concerns and uncertainty about the general plan, which requires a vote every 10 years. Early voting for the primary election that includes the general plan began on June 24th. July 10th is the last day to request a mail ballot, and the county recommends mailing them back by July 14th. You can go to pima.vote for the recorder's office and election department links and information. There's like two or three planning issues that are related, and they're all kind of getting conflated and wound up together, Barrett said. And so the FAQ is our attempt to try to separate these individual standing plans and lay out what each of those threads means and what they do and what they do not do. The Sorita Town Council okayed a final draft of the 10-year state-mandated general plan on February 23rd. Council members made last-minute changes with an eye on growing concern over two proposed highways connecting the Interstate 19 in the center of town, Interstate 11 and the Sonoran Corridor, also known as State Route 410. Community Development Director Anna Cassidy said the general plan is a broad policy framework that guides the town's decision-making during the next 10 to 20 years. "It doesn't get into the weeds," she said. "It's not regulatory like the zoning code is, so that's really important for what the community is talking about, is they're waiting and wanting regulation to come out of the general plan, but it's not a regulatory document." While the general plan provides direction for future decisions, Cassidy said it is broad and decisions are made holistically using all of the department's elements. She said the general plan has broad policies about diversifying the town's economic base and encouraging high-tech businesses, but it doesn't provide any specific business the town does or does not want. Barrett and Cassidy said that the flip side is the general plan has environmental sections that balance economic development needs with conservation and sustainability. "And one thing that sometimes happens is when an issue comes up, people go through the general plan and they find one policy, and they say this policy is going to either stop or something or make it happen," Cassidy said, adding they actually look at every policy in every chapter before evaluating a rezoning request as an example. The General Plan 2026 is going to voters at a time when there is growing concern over a zoning interpretation Rancho Sorita requested in July of 2025 about whether a data center was permissible on a 200-acre area near La Cañada Drive and Suarita Road, just south of Rancho Resort. Around 200 people packed into the sanctuary at the Good Shepherd UCC on June 24th for a data center forum with several speakers. I had the imagery of a tree where the general plan is kind of like the trunk and the branches, so that's the structure of it, Cassidy said on Wednesday about the June 24th presentation. But we fill in the details so you get down into the nitty-gritty of how do we make this vision happen. And it comes through the budget, the zoning code, the capital improvement program, and things like that. Cassidy said General Plan 2026 is more narrow than the less focused policy in the current general plan. Aspire 2035 that just encourage economic development. General Plan 2026 calls for targeted recruitment of high-value industries such as advanced manufacturing, aerospace and defense, optics and photonics, healthcare, hospitality and entertainment, and information and communications technology. Cassidy said the closest policy in Aspire would be to provide for flexible zoning to meet the needs of existing and future businesses and industry, which is far broader than the current one, she added. General Plan 2026 also calls for flexible zoning to accommodate energy industry formats like research parks, flex space, and high-tech manufacturing. So it's more about the form of development versus an actual user, Cassidy said. And it's really targeting the newer types of industry uses versus the old, heavy polluting industries like asphalt plants. So these are really cleaner types of industry. Barrett said the idea is that it would be industrial uses that look like office buildings on the outside, rather than smokestacks and chimneys. He said it's about encouraging a cleaner and sleeker and more visually aesthetic industrial sector in town. Barrett said that the idea could include data centers, but that doesn't necessarily necessitate it. While the General Plan 2026 eyes advanced manufacturing and high-tech industries, it doesn't provide any regulations. Cassidy said Barrett said that the zoning interpretation the town provided Rancho Sorita only applies to the industrial zoning that is within the Rancho Sorita specific plan, which was approved in 1996 and uses grandfathered Pima County zoning codes from the year prior. They also said that the only industrial zones within the town limits are already filled out and they were too small for large-scale data center before any development. Town staff is turning its attention to making an industrial zone amendment that would provide regulations that are related to data centers in the future, as annexations to the east could bring in new industrial zone lands. Cassidy called the possible amendment a forward-thinking move. The entitlements we have in the specific plans, they're set and done, but we want to be prepared as we grow to the east, she said. She said that an amendment providing specific regulations for data centers in the code would also be better than those case-by-case interpretations. Economic Development Director Victor Gonzalez said the town staff is already working on an industrial zoning amendment, and once we get past the general plan, it would kind of be an all-inclusive process with public input and engagement and so on and so forth, he said. Barrett said the amendment could include a host of aspects that the community is wanting, such as regulations on size, use, noise, and more. Cassidy said the top thing for the public to know about the General Plan 2026 is that it's completely separate from the issue of a data center. A no vote does not prohibit data centers, and a yes vote does not guarantee data centers, she said. Cassidy said the plan is 2 years of community-involved work that reflects current realities and has clear statements about I-11 and the Sonoran Corridor than Aspire does. The town council's last-minute changes during the February 23 approval acknowledged the need for the highways while also rejecting the state's current alignments. Cassidy and Barrett said residents rejecting General Plan 2026 would simply mean town staff would spend more time retooling a new general plan instead of actually focusing on an industrial zone amendment that does address those data centers. State law mandates that the town have voter-approved general plan every 10 years. Cassidy said that there are financial penalties to not passing it, but that there are costs in staff hours and possibly paying for a special election, if so needed. Cassidy said staff is there to talk to anybody who has questions about General Plan 2026 or wants to talk about the plan's facts, adding that people can stop by the town hall's front counter so they can walk them through everything. And you know, I'd rather have them show up and ask the questions than get their news from social media, Cassidy said. The Santa Rita Fire District crews put out a brush fire on Thursday that was sparked during a car rollover near Mission and McGee Ranch Roads. The vehicle was engulfed in flames when crews arrived at about 4 o'clock in the evening, causing a roadside fire of an estimated 20 by 75 yards. Crews stopped the forward progress of the fire in about 15 minutes, this according to SRFD spokesman. Nobody was found in the vehicle, car, or in the vicinity of the crash site, and the Pima County Sheriff's Office is investigating the incident. Santa Rita Fire District crews rescued a hiker having a medical emergency on Friday morning in Madera Canyon. Firefighters were called just before 9 a.m. and hiked about two-thirds of a mile up Bog Spring Trail to reach the hiker. The person was taken off the trail in a Stokes basket, a stretcher that is designed for rough terrain. The patient was taken in stable condition to a local hospital for further evaluation, and no other information was available. Assisting agencies included Tubac Fire, Drexel Heights Fire District, American Medical Response, or AMR, and the United States Forest Service. And in honor of the July 4th holiday, 250 years old, here's some quotes from some famous people. Harry S. Truman said, "America was not built on fear. America was built on courage, imagination, and an unbeatable determination to do the job at hand." Madeleine Albright said, "The magic of America is that we're a free and open society with a mixed population. Part of our security is our freedom." Ronald Reagan, "All great things in America begins at the dinner table." Martha Gellhorn, "Citizenship is a tough operation which obliges a citizen to make his own informed opinion and then stand by it." Albert Camus, "Freedom is nothing else but a chance to be better." And Eleanor Roosevelt once said, "True patriotism springs from a belief in the dignity of the individual, freedom and equality not only for Americans, but for all people on the earth." Frederick Douglass, "The life of the nation is secure only when the nation is honest, truthful, and virtuous." Abraham Lincoln said, "I'd like to see a man proud of the place where he lives, and I'd like to see a man live so that the place will be proud of him." And our own Irma Brombeck, "You have to love a nation that celebrates its independence every July 4th, not with a parade of guns or tanks or soldiers who file by the White House in a show of strength and muscle, but with family picnics where kids throw frisbees, the potato salad gets iffy, and the flies die from happiness." Barbara Jordan, "What the people want is very simple. They want an America as good as its promise." Martin Luther King Jr., "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." William Jennings Bryan, "The essence of patriotism lies in the willingness to sacrifice for one's country. Just as true greatness finds expression, not in blessings enjoyed, but in good bestowed." And Rosa Parks, "I'd like to be remembered as a person who wanted to be free and wanted other people to also be free." Sam Adams, "If ever the time should come when vain and aspiring men shall possess the highest seats in government, our country will stand in need of its experienced patriots to prevent its ruin." Emma Lazarus, "Until we are free, all of us are free, none of us are free." Ben Franklin, "Where liberty dwells, there is my country." Thomas Wolfe, "America, it is the only place where miracles not only happen, but where they happen all of the time." All for Wendell Holmes, one flag, one land, one heart, one hand, one nation evermore. And Sandra Day O'Connor, our history is not part story of a perfect, but a story of the persistent. We are people of vision, overcoming our imperfections and always striving for a more perfect union. And John McCain, Americans never quit, we never surrender, we never hide from history, we make history. And Daniel Webster, may the sun in his course visit no land more free, more happy, more lovely than this, our own country. So there's a little bit of patriotism for you. And I see here from the USA Today, most Americans say that Donald Trump hasn't paid enough attention to the nation's most pressing problems, this according to a new poll. The Economist YouGov survey that was released on Tuesday found that 60% of respondents believe Trump has not focused on the country's most important issues. These findings come as Americans continue to grapple with high living costs and economic uncertainty. The poll also found Trump underwater on several key issues. More than half of respondents said they disapprove of his handling of health care, education, abortion, and the environment. Only 28% of Americans said the country is headed in the right direction, while 61% said it is on the wrong track, according to the survey conducted June 26th through 29th among 1,606 adults. The poll's margin of error was plus or minus 3.2 percentage points. And the results arrived days after Trump downplayed a bipartisan housing bill he has yet to decide whether to sign, calling it a big yawn compared with the Save America Act, an election reform bill which he has been urging Congress to pass. Some people say it's wonderful. To me, compared to the Save America Act, just about everything is a big yawn, Trump told reporters at the White House. His approval rating has been net negative for more than a year, and he's been fluctuating but trending more negative over the past several months. Here's Trump's average approval rating, according to aggregators. Real Clear Policies poll average, as of July 1st, 40.6 approve, 57.4 disapprove. The New York Times, as of July 1st, 39% approve, 58 disapprove. And the Silver Bulletin as of July 1st, 39.4 approve and 57.5 disapprove of what he's doing. It's 13 minutes in front of 10 o'clock here at Sun Sounds. Nearly 20 years have passed since authorities responded to an emergency call in the Alachuxan region of the Arizona desert. A bulldozing crew assigned to work along Interstate 15 in Pima County noticed a heap in the desert expanse, and so they looked closer. It was a girl, her small frame lifeless and decomposing in the July heat. For years after her death in 2007, authorities knew Ada Tomas Ramirez only by what she left behind. She was carrying a falsified Mexican birth certificate. She wore gray, laced-up sneakers with the logo of a footwear company, Arco, that was painted on the tongue and on the heels. Small earrings framed her face. She wore a small graphic t-shirt, peach-colored with beaded shoulders and camouflage print-lock letters. You go, girl. 2 decades later, authorities have finally confirmed her identity. Ramirez went missing from a rural municipality in Guatemala before her death in the Arizona desert, according to a July 2nd news release from Moxie Forensic Investigations. She died 2,000 miles north of Culico, her hometown in the mountains of Guatemala's Huehuetenango province. She was 14 years old, and Ramirez is one of thousands of migrants who have died attempting the long desert trek from Central America. Many others remain nameless. Moxie, the forensic investigations company, identified Ramirez as part of a renewed effort by the Pima County Office of the Medical Examiner to crack any cold cases. Ramirez's name appeared on the forged paperwork that she carried across the border, but authorities couldn't confirm that it was her real identity. Investigators at the time estimated she was between 13 and 17 years old. The company said in a news release that their investigators also worked with the Consulate of Guatemala in Tucson, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, Bode Technology, the Argentine Forensic Anthropology Team, and the Guatemalan Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Ada's identification comes from the culmination of collaborative efforts and profound dedication needed to restore the identities of Latin Americans and grant their loved ones answers, said Brian Worders, a spokesperson for MOXIE. Our thoughts are with Ada's family as they process this development. And Scott Dyke's story of Meandering the Mesquite, the greatest American, lest we forget. The year-long preparations of the list of significant contributors to the history of the United States of America by this column was an arbitrary process, undeniably debatable. Selecting the best of the best to celebrate our country's birthday, however, was far easier. The choice, symbolic in nature, is representative of our nation's struggles and triumphs, replete with agony and glory. The final choice has no name, nor has either history or lineage. He is the best of us. The soldier, mostly, was and is a pawn of war. The war might not be righteous. It might be unnecessary. Whatever the legions of historians pontificate from a safe distance is irrelevant. It is the soldier and his sacrifice that is immortal. From Yorktown to Gettysburg, from Verdun to Omaha Beach, and from Heartbreak Ridge to Hamburger Hill. The American soldier was there, as stout as the Spartans in the Pass of Thermopylae, serving with honor and courage. William Gladstone, famed for sweeping societal observations that have survived the passage of time, said the following: "Show me the manner of which a nation cares for its dead, and I will measure with mathematical exactness the tender sympathies of its people." Lincoln put it succinctly in a letter written in the midst of our tragic Civil War: "The highest merit, then, is due to the soldier." A number of places across our country have sites that honor unidentified soldiers that have died in combat. In 1826, Alexandria, Virginia, consecrated a grave that contained the remains of revolutionary unnamed soldiers. In 1866, Arlington National Cemetery dedicated a mass grave of unidentified Civil War remains totaling 1,100. They perished in the brutal Battle of Bull Run, Manassas. Both North and South rest here. Several states, including those that were in the Confederacy, have honored the unidentified fallen from various wars and battles. However, the one place that is most sacred and symbolic is the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Arlington. The genesis of this hallowed ground began in France in 1921. Major Robert Harbold was commissioned to select the remains for an interment of an unknown soldier. He, in turn, picked a decorated World War I sergeant named Edward Younger to choose them from four drape-flag coffins. When later queried, Sergeant Younger told the reporters, "The coffin second from the right drew my attention." Subsequently, that coffin was shipped to Arlington National Cemetery. Fittingly, Sergeant Younger would be buried in Arlington in 1942. A sarcophagus was placed on the gravesite in 1932. The Piccirilli brothers, New York City Italian immigrants who were well known as marble cutters, hence the Lincoln Memorial, were commissioned to construct it. The white marble structure surrounds the grave. On the west side of it, the inscription, "Here rests in honored glory an unknown American soldier known but to God." An elite honor guard was initiated in 1948. Every hour or half hour seasonally selected, the changing of the guard occurs. One guard finishes his duty and, under a command of a third, is replaced. The three fittingly wear no rank, as the rank of the remains is unknown. The newly posted soldier and relief soldier repeat a 21-step maneuver every day, every week, every year. The ceremony is carried out by highly trained members of the 3rd U.S. Infantry, the oldest serving regiment since 1784. Over time, remains from the other wars have been interred. World War II and Korea were placed here in 1958. In 1984, a veteran unknown was interred. With the advent of DNA analysis, his remains were identified later. U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Michael Blassie's remains were returned to his family, and that grave remains empty. No matter, they are all one now. This author has been affected by some of our nation's significant places, namely the field of Pickett's Charge at Gettysburg, the Little Bighorn Battlefield, the USS Arizona at Pearl Harbor, and the Texas School Book Depository in Grassy Knoll in Dallas. They represented climactic events in our nation's history. That said, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier is something much larger, immeasurable, a place where gratitude is not nearly enough, a place where tears flow and a feeling of inadequacy overwhelms, like an atom in a galaxy. Militis memanent sepertina, the eternal soldier, he rests in God's arms. Scott Dyke is a Wyatt Earp historian, a Western lecturer and researcher. He's a member of the Western Writers of America, and he can be reached at scottydyke5@gmail.com. And wrapping up today's show with Today in History, in 1699, pirate Captain William Kidd was captured. Formerly a merchant from New York, Captain Kidd turned to piracy after the British Navy attempted to impress his crew into service. He sailed the high seas for 3 years before his capture, and he was tried in England and hanged. In 1917, Arab forces capture Aquaba. T.E. Lawrence, an English soldier and spy, served as a military advisor and leader of the Arab forces fighting for independence from the Ottoman Empire. Along with Ada Ibu Tayi, Lawrence led the forces as they were swept into Aqaba, a strategic important Red Sea port. The battle was later depicted in the film Lawrence of Arabia. In 1942, Anne Frank's family goes into hiding. The Nazis invaded and occupied the Netherlands beginning in 1940, and by 1942 their persecution of Dutch Jews was being committed in earnest. As a result of the persecution, Anne's family had originally planned to go underground on July 16th, but when Anne's sister Margot received an order to report to a work camp, they moved their plans up. Anne and her family concealed themselves in a secret apartment behind a bookcase in the building where her father worked for almost 2 years, during which time Anne kept her now famous diary. The family was betrayed and arrested in August of 1944. And in 1946, Bugs Moran is captured. The gangster had been one of the major players in organized crime during a prohibition, although his influence was severely curtailed after Al Capone had his top henchman gunned down in the St. Valentine's Day massacre. The FBI never stopped looking for him, though, and he later died in prison. In 1957, Paul McCartney meets John Lennon. The two met at a church picnic in Woolton, a village near Liverpool, England. Lennon's band, the Quarrymen, was playing at the picnic, and he and McCartney hit it off. They would later form the Beatles, one of the most influential pop music bands of the British invasion. In 1986, Davis Finney wins a road stage on the Tour de France. He was the first American cyclist to do so, winning stage 3, which is on the island of Corsica. And in 2003, calling all stars, the Evrotoria planetary radar station sends a METI message to 5 stars in the Earth's neighborhood. The messages will arrive to those stars in 2036, 2040, 2044, and 2049, respectively. And that's the Green Valley News for this Monday. Mark DeGroft with you. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Sun Sounds programming coming your way. Back on Wednesday. Until then, take care.